Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. I recently drove 3,200 miles on a solo road trip to research a book that I'm working on for Night Sky Tourist. And it's all about night sky experiences on Highway 89. And this was a route that originally ran from the border of Mexico at Nogales, Arizona, all the way to the border of Canada near Babb, Montana. And the Montana segment of Highway 89 swept me away. And some parts of it simply stole my heart. I'm talking to you, Livingston and Paradise Valley. If you've never seen the Milky Way stretching from horizon to horizon, then you need to plan a trip to Montana. I attended a stargazing program at Glacier National Park's St. Mary Visitor Center, and I got to watch twilight disappear into utter blackness while the Milky Way just got brighter and brighter, and it was stunning. And then a few days later, I was leaving a concert in rural Paradise Valley one night, and when I looked up, there was the Milky Way doing what it does every night over that beautiful valley. This is the valley where the Yellowstone River flows through, where the catastrophic flooding recently happened. The Native American tribes that are most strongly associated with this Highway 89 corridor are the Blackfeet, the Crow, and the Shoshone. And the more I learn about their connection with the night sky, the more I value protecting the constellations and the stars associated with them. And by protecting, I'm talking about fighting light pollution. And speaking of these tribes, yesterday was a day that I prefer to recognize as Indigenous Peoples Day rather than Columbus Day. We can learn so much from our Native American neighbors if we would just take the time to listen. Their respect for the earth and for the stars of the sky are desperately needed today. Montana is truly a stargazer's paradise. And I've invited Lynn Powers to join me tonight to talk about the night sky experiences in this stunningly beautiful state. Lynn is the president of the Southwest Montana Astronomical Society, which is an organization that's been introducing people to the night sky since 1995. She's a NASA Solar System Ambassador. She teaches at Montana State University. She's a keynote speaker at numerous astronomy-related events, and she holds a Master's of Science degree in science education. And let me tell you, her list of activities and contributions is extensive, which to me proves her deep passion for the night sky. Lynn was busy traveling all over Montana and even North Dakota when we first connected, and she was giving astronomy talks, she was leading stargazing experiences, so I was really lucky to pin her down for a bit for an interview. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, Lynn Powers. And thank you so much for joining us on the Night Sky Tourist podcast. I'm excited to talk about Montana tonight because I have a special place in my heart for Montana.
I'm glad to be here.
First of all, tell us a little bit about Southwest Montana Astronomical Society and how you got involved with it.
We call ourselves SMAS. We have been around almost 25, 30 years. We are in a pretty cool area. We are mainly located in Bozeman. We have Montana State University there. We have Yellowstone. We have dark skies. And so the club started through people that were at Montana State University, some of the professors there, and it has grown. And I love the outreach part. I love to go out and do events where we bring telescopes and have star parties and let people look through our telescopes. There's usually some sort of talk and educational piece that goes along with it, as well as not just at nighttime. I like solar too. Mm-hmm. And so having outreach at, like in Bozeman, we have a thing called Lunch on the Lawn. And at lunchtime, we have our telescope out. We sit and listen to music and people get to come and look through the telescope at the sun.
So tell me a little bit about your story. How did you get involved in doing astronomy, leading things like this? What's your story?
I grew up during the space race and in Seattle. Oh. So a lot of things happened in Seattle with the Space Needle, and Boeing was there. So when anything would happen on TV, I remember being woken up in the middle of the night to watch some events that were on TV. And that was the only way to do it. You had to watch it live when it happened. I remember going to the Space Needle and meeting the astronauts, the test pilots from the Apollo mission way back when they were all going around stomping the ground, trying to drum up business and whatnot. And so I've always had a fondness for it. I never had a telescope till I was much older, but when my kids were little, I would take them to star parties. And I just had so much fun with that. And then about 15 years ago, I fell and the first thing that hit was the back of my head. Not too good, but they told me to neuroplasticity to get my head going again, to jump into something. I did a lot of different things, you know, like word puzzle, Sudoku, this, that, and the other thing. But I really liked astronomy. So I jumped head over heels right into that. I joined SMAS. And then I started going to star parties. The first star party I did was in Yellowstone. They put me on a telescope and they said, you're looking at this. If anyone asks questions, just tell them this. And I was hooked. So I did get a telescope after that. And I've had about a dozen telescopes over the years. I was just so thirsty for more knowledge. I started applying to these different workshops and started going to them and learning more. We joined the Night Sky Network, Astronomical Society of the Pacific. And they have this component where they support astronomy clubs and members of astronomy clubs with outreach components and help you to be a better teacher when you're out in the public doing these events. So we joined that. And through that, I found more and more opportunities. So my resume has grown, but through the ASP in 2019, I received their Las Cumbres Community Outreach Award for all the stuff that I have been doing.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I was recently in Montana, and I grew up in Northern Idaho, and my family had a family cabin that all of my extended relatives used just west of Kalispell. So I spent every summer of my life up there and going up to Glacier and occasionally going to Yellowstone. And, you know, as a kid, I just took the night sky for granted. There wasn't a whole lot of light pollution in the town I grew up in. And then, of course, we go to the cabin and there was nothing. It was just so dark. And I never thought of it. I thought everybody saw the Milky Way. And Montana is really special because it's a very big state and it has a relatively low population for the size of the state. And, you know, I think most people know Montana, it's known as big sky country, or, you know, and I always thought about that as being big sky during the daytime, but it's really a big sky at nighttime too.
Yeah.
When I was at Glacier, oh boy, as soon as it was dark, nobody had to tell you where the Milky Way was. Same in Yellowstone. I was in Paradise Valley, just south of Livingston. And I mean, there was the Milky Way.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, are there many organized stargazing activities throughout the state? Are you the main person who does that, or are there other organizations who do stargazing activities around the state?
There are others. Unfortunately, from COVID, where we had to shut everything down, some of the clubs are having trouble starting back up. I know that there's a club in Billings, the Yellowstone Valley Astronomy Association. They're trying to get started back up. Central Montana Astronomical Society. There's a club in Helena. There's us. And so we're pretty much a club, even though we go out and do outreach, is more for the members, to try to bring up the members, to learn the night sky, to go out and take their telescopes out and to enjoy it.
And I know you've been pretty busy doing outreach, because when you and I tried to connect, you were getting ready to do a presentation at First Peoples Buffalo Jump State Park outside of Great Falls. And they do stargazing programs there.
Yes, I did a presentation for the AmeriCorps kids that come into all the state parks 2 summers ago. And one of the gals says, I need to get you up to our park. And that was in Ulm, ULM, just outside of Great Falls, the First Peoples Buffalo Jump State Park.
It's a mouthful.
It is. So last year, got up there and we had a native Blackfeet elder come in and do some star stories, did a presentation, and then we went outside and looked at the sky. They did it at the end of their season, and they said they had to do it again this year. And so this was the second annual, and they say that they're going to try to do more throughout the year. There's a couple people, like I said, up in Great Falls that are helping with that.
I can't imagine a more perfect stargazing night than to not only get to look at the stars, but to look at it from an area where you can see the Milky Way and have a Native American person sharing their stories. That to me sounds like the perfect night under the stars.
It is. It is. It really is. Hearing the star stories from the elder. So yeah, I did quite a few different events this year. I even went over to North Dakota, to Medora. They have the Dakota Nights Astronomy Festival. This was their 10th year, and that's at the end of summer, beginning sometime around Labor Day, whenever we get the dark skies. And so that's a fun thing to be able to go to.
And I know that Montana has 2 international dark sky parks. One of them is the Glacier National Park, and they've been a dark sky park for quite a long time. And the other is on the eastern side of the state, at Medicine Rock State Park. What can you tell us about visiting these locations for stargazing experiences or events?
At Glacier, you probably experienced it while you were there. They have Astro VIPs. So they have people that are either at St. Mary's or over in Apgar, and they're having the solar scopes out. They built a really cool observatory, a 21-inch plane wave, and they're just learning how to use it. And so there's going to be some cool things coming out of that. And then they have their star parties once a month during the summertime, of course, Logan Pass, and that's a lot of fun. Those are by ticket only, because if you've been to the park, you know that Logan Pass, it fills up fast. And if we put our telescopes out there, there's not a lot of room. So if you find out that they're having it, they have these tickets, and it's limited to how many people cars can park. And it starts off with a presentation as it's getting dark. And then they break people up into groups, and you get a star tour of the constellations with a green laser light, which is the coolest tool that we have nowadays. And then we have a dozen or so telescopes out, and you can sit and go through and talk to the people at the telescopes and take a look at what they're looking at. And that's a lot of fun. Out at the other park, I've been in that area. I've done star parties in Medora, just across the border, in Glendive, in Miles City, and at Crow Agency near the Bighorn Battlefield. And the skies through there are phenomenal. There's hardly anyone out there. And It's so dark. The Milky Way casts a shadow.
Wow.
It gets pretty bright. You're out there and it's dark. You don't need a flashlight or anything. It's phenomenal. And there's a few, okay, I've taken groups of kids to New York and Washington, D.C. And I grew up, like I said, in Seattle. And in the big cities, you look up and maybe you find a dozen lights in the sky. One of them could be the moon. You get a couple of planets and maybe a couple of the brighter stars. So coming out to Montana and you see just a little bit more, it's even in a big city, if you're in Billings or Missoula or Bozeman, Helena or Great Falls, you're still going to see more than you do in a big city or on the East Coast. But there were things that I was able to see, such as Andromeda, really easy.
In those, with the naked eye, right?
Naked eye. The sky was so dark. It was phenomenal.
It blows my mind to think that we can see another galaxy with a naked eye.
Right?
It just staggers my mind. And I've seen Andromeda. It's like my brain just can't take in that's what I'm looking at that far away. It's crazy.
Millions of stars right there, that little smudge in the sky. Yeah.
Lynn, I'm curious to know what you know about the connection between the Native American tribes and the night sky, what their relationship with it is. I know that the Crow and the Blackfeet, as you've mentioned both of them already, have very personal star stories and perspectives of the world around that. Do you know anything that you can share with us?
And that's the thing. I love their perspective. Mm-hmm. I might have knowledge of some of their stories, but I don't have permission to share them. And that is, to me, when I get around one of the elders who has permission to tell the stories, I just love them. There are some stories that are out there that they have given permission for people to share. There are some books, but our culture has gone from where we looked up at the night sky to find our place. We could tell time with it. We could tell seasons. We could tell directions. And now we're looking down at our devices and we've lost that connection. There are quite a few areas in Montana and the neighboring states. Alberta seems to have more, they call them first peoples, more sites up there, the cairns, the rock formations, just south of Billings, up in the Bighorn Mountains. We have the Bighorn Medicine Wheel, and that's a really fun place to go up to. Now you have to get special permission to be up there at night. But people have done research on that, and there's some books on that.
You know, an interesting thing about my journey so far with Night Sky Tourist, I got really interested right away in the star stories of the indigenous cultures, whether it was here or Australia, you know, anywhere, because I think there's two things. I think, first of all, we've turned the night sky too much into just science. I'm all about science, but if you're going to take your family out and go stargazing, you're wanting to have this experience. Mm-hmm. And so there was that. And then there was the idea that, you know, we've kind of just inherited the Greek and Roman mythologies and star stories. And I think that it's too easy for us to think that that's all there is, those Greek and Roman stories. But all these cultures had such different stories. They didn't even sometimes see the constellations the same way as the Greeks and Romans did. They saw different pictures that related to them and their own cultures. And so I got really curious about those indigenous star stories. But I've been learning recently, I think just like what you just shared, that not all of those stories belong to everybody.
Right.
And I've had to learn to respect that. And I've had to kind of try to understand that cultural way of thinking about their stories. And so I appreciate that you said that, that you shared that. So I'm still learning this.
Yeah.
So if someone were to travel to Montana, what recommendations or tips would you give them about stargazing there? And also, because winter's coming up, what about stargazing in Montana in the winter? Because I know it's chilly.
It can be done.
Yes.
If you bring your telescope, it has to acclimate to the temperature. So if you bring it out of a nice warm car, it's going to freeze over. Anytime you come is a good time. If you're coming from a large city, there's a term in astronomy about light snobs. There's people who will not go out unless it's totally dark and there's no lights anywhere around, and they will only go out on new moon nights. I was invited to do some outreach at the Red Ants Pants Festival, which is just along 89, right? And they had asked a couple of people, and people said, no, 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 the lights of the festival. But, you know, you could see the planets. And there's so many people who have never looked through a telescope to be able to have a chance to do that. It doesn't matter if there's a little bit of light pollution. It's still better than something that they would see anywhere else. What do you need to bring besides your eyes? I would make sure that if you had some chairs and just sit back and look. There is so much that you can see naked eye. If you have binoculars, there's things that you can see through binoculars, a spotting scope. A lot of people have that, especially if they're coming into Yellowstone to see the animals. Turn it up to the night sky. You don't have to have a telescope. And just sit back and look at it. Dress warmly. I have done star parties in Yellowstone on New Year's for an event up there. And we had a place where they could go in and get hot chocolate and warm back up and come back out and look through the telescope. And we were looking at the Orion Nebula and a whole bunch of things that were out. And so if you're going to be here for a while, try to go out a couple nights in a row and see how things change. It does not matter if the moon is out. There's still a lot more that you can see than in a big city.
I would offer a tip if people are from the southern part of the United States. Like, I live in Arizona. And so in the summertime, 8 o'clock p.m. is completely dark here. We also don't observe daylight savings time in Arizona. So that's part of the issue too. But for people to remember, if they go to Montana in the summer, it's going to be pretty late before it gets dark enough to see any stars.
10:30, 11 at night. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and sharing with us about Montana. I've thoroughly enjoyed my recent trip there. You know, as I said, I spent every summer there in my childhood, but, you know, this was just a different kind of trip for me, and I just enjoyed it so much. So nice. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thanks for having me.
I've got a really fun activity for you and your family that will get you outside at twilight together. Twilight is this magical time of transition between daytime and nighttime. You know, the birds are noisily bedding down for the night while the bats are making their appearance for dinner, and some critters are calling it a day while others are just starting out their active hours. And when you're outside without the interference of bright screens and exterior lighting, your eyes go through a transition too. They switch from using the cones that can see bright colors and be able to read words on a page to using rods that help you to see better at night, but they can't see color or read in the dark. My twilight activity begins at sunset and it goes all the way until twilight passes. And I've created a chart that you can download for free to help you track your experiment. It's fun, it's really easy for kids and adults. Heck, invite grandpa and grandma over to join you. You can get all the information for this great activity with a free download at nightskytourist.com/twilight-activity. Or make it easier, just go to the show notes and click on the link. Happy stargazing to you. It's time for our tour across the night sky. Pause the podcast, gather everybody in your house, and I'll meet you outside under the stars. Tonight, we're going to take a tour across the constellations of the ecliptic. What's the ecliptic? Well, if you envision the equator on a globe, and then take that equator and imagine stretching that circle way, way, way out into space. As you stand on Earth and you're looking out towards the stars, there are specific constellations that are positioned along that circle, and we call that the ecliptic. And for thousands and thousands of years, many cultures around the world used those constellations to help them track the seasons. For Western stargazers, they conveniently see 12 constellations, one for each month of the year. They're also the same constellations that astrology uses for their zodiac. You can usually see about 5 of these at any given time at night. And if you're stargazing tonight around 9 o'clock p.m., you should be able to see Sagittarius, Capricornus, Aquarius, Pisces, Aries, and part of Taurus, but only if you're lucky. And I say that because most of these specific constellations that I named are made of dim stars. So if you're under the influence of light pollution, they might be really difficult to see. So I recommend that you use a stargazing app on your phone to help you along tonight. But before we get started, turn your screen brightness all the way down and put your phone on night mode. And this is going to help protect your night vision just a little bit better, especially when we're trying to see those faint stars in the sky. Start by looking to the southwestern horizon where the sun went down. If you have an unobstructed view of the horizon, no mountains or buildings or trees, then you should be able to catch part of Sagittarius before it sets for the night. Sagittarius is a really large constellation, but it's easier to look for the smaller asterism in it, and that looks like a teapot with a pointy lid. Those stars are fairly bright and they're pretty easy to see. Can you see it? If the sky were dark enough without any light pollution, it would look like steam was rising from the teapot spout and stretching across the sky toward the northeast. And that steam is actually the path of the Milky Way. Now shift your eyes east of Sagittarius to find Capricornus. This one's a bit tricky to find with light pollution. It looks like an upside down triangle, and that top long side is kind of bent downward a bit like a V. And the tips of this triangle are actually brighter stars, so sometimes those help you find it a little bit better. But the rest of the stars are tiny and dim. So if you need to, go ahead and use your stargazing app. Saturn is located just a bit to the west of the eastern tip of Capricornus. If you can get binoculars or use a telescope, be sure to look at Saturn before the end of this year. You'll be able to actually see its rings, and it's beautiful. Now, just east of Capricornus is the constellation Aquarius. It has a few bright stars, but it has an unusual arrangement of stars. So you might find it easier with your stargazing app. Now we're going to head a bit east of Aquarius to look for the constellation Pisces. Every star in this constellation is small and dim, and it is especially tricky to find in light-polluted skies. Jupiter is located just a bit to the west of Pisces. It's the brightest thing in the night sky after the moon right now. If you can look at it through a decent backyard telescope, you'll be able to see its colored storm bands and 4 of its 80 moons. They're called the Galilean moons because they are the 4 moons that Galileo saw when he looked at Jupiter for the first time. To the east of Pisces is the tiny constellation called Aries. It's only made up of a few stars, but one of them is fairly bright. And all I can say about Aries is that the ancient people who saw it as a ram had a really good imagination. And sometimes I wonder if they had something that enhanced their imaginations because it's nearly a straight line. But hey, kudos to them for seeing something there. And then finally, right at the eastern horizon where the sun is rising these days, you can see Taurus partially peeking up into the sky. You'll probably notice a tiny cluster of really bright stars. That's the Pleiades, which is an asterism within Taurus. And Pleiades is one of my favorite groupings of stars in the entire night sky. And I'm pretty excited that they're coming back into view. We're going to talk more about them as we get closer to winter, when they actually climb higher in the sky and we can see them a lot better. If you want to check out a meteor shower, the Orionids will be at the peak on evening of October 21st and into the morning of the 22nd. You'll see the most meteors if you wait until after midnight and you get to a really dark location. But, you know, give it a try in your own yard if you can't get away. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to all the things mentioned in this episode, or visit nightskytourist.com/50. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist Podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist Podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it in your podcatcher and leave a written review. Your reviews are really important to me, and they help others discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks. Until then, keep looking up.